Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Thursday, November 16th, 2023. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate your viewership and we're happy to be broadcasting on WVW-TV, which is a great source for news and information. As you know, we're not mainstream, but we bring ideas and concepts and thoughts to the marketplace of ideas. And we're very thankful under our First Amendment right to freedom of speech to be able to do so. So thank you very much for tuning in. As you know, we're not a commercial broadcast network, so we don't sell advertising. There are no commercials run during our programming. And that means you get uninterrupted news and thought and opinion and dialogue, and that's a good thing. As you also know, as being a viewer, there's no paywall or subscription. You can watch our content 24 hours a day, both real-time, live, like right now, or the recorded programs that you can watch at 2 o'clock in the morning if you'd like. If you can't sleep, you can you have access to our information around the clock. And that happens through the kindness of viewers such as yourself, who also are sponsors. You can contribute to this ongoing ministry and this ongoing work. And you can contact the WVW-TV Foundation and make a donation, and that helps keep the media on the air. We also have sponsors, of course, for our program here, and the sponsor for my show is Swiss America Trading Company, which is it's an American company, and of course it's based in Arizona, and they make a market in precious metals, tangible precious metals. And if you're interested at all in adding to your portfolio of gold or silver, platinum, whether it's bullion coins or gold bullion or silver bullion, or even coin collection type numismatic coins, you should give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271 and ask them to send you some free information. Tell them Dan Eastman sent you, and they'll be happy to mail out some free information at no obligation and no charge. You could also go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and you can shop around and see what they have to offer. So if you're going to do that and you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, then they'll be happy to send you the same free information. And you can also take a look at what they have to offer and see if their products are something that might fit your needs. If you think about precious metals, there are different ways to own it. Of course, you can own the paper version or the electronic version by buying on an exchange somewhere. But there's an old saying that if you don't have it in your hand, you don't own it. And effectively what tangible precious metals means is that it's tangible, it's tactile, you can hold it in your hand. So if you're interested in diversifying your wealth, you can purchase tangible coins, precious metal coins, or bullion, or even collector coins from Swiss America, and diversify your holdings. And of course, that's a very convenient way because governments around the world mint bullion coins for the very purpose of having their citizens and people around the globe purchase bullion coins as a way to diversify their holdings. One of the interesting things about Swiss America right now is that they are offering a special on silver half dollars. These are pure silver half dollars that are minted by the US government. And it's called the Standing Liberty Half. And right now you can get these coins for $13.50, and that includes shipping. So if you purchase things online, you know that sometimes shipping can be a little pricey. Well, this is a great deal because you can buy the coins at a good price, and the shipping is included. And of course, precious metals are heavy. That's part of what makes them precious. And you can get that shipped to your home or office or business. And it's a great time of the year if you're thinking about not only adding to your personal collection, but also if you're thinking of gifts for the hard-to-buy people in your family, nieces and nephews and children and grandchildren and aunts and uncles. If you're wondering what to get old Uncle Joe for Christmas this year, maybe a gift of a silver half dollar might just do the trick. It's something that they will certainly not use and throw into the landfill. It's something that people keep forever because it's precious. It's a precious metal. And it's also a way for them to diversify, and they make great gifts. Now, there is a cap. You can only buy up to 250 of these coins at a time. And once the inventory is depleted, then the deal's over. They'll have to come up with something else. So if you're interested at all in finding a silver lining to all of this bad news that we hear about constantly, I think, certainly give Swiss America a call, 1-800-519-6271. Go to the website, SwissAmerica.com, use the promo code Eastman, and see if there's something there for you. So I'd like to thank Swiss America for their sponsorship. They're a great company. They've been a great friend of this network for a very, very long time. Okay, let's jump into the news. And of course, this being November, which is usually a slow news week, news month anyway, it's sort of getting to be toward the end of the year. And of course, the kickoff to the holiday season. And in certain parts of the world, it's deer hunting season, which means a lot of people disappear into the woods for 10 days. So things tend to slow down. But needless to say, the news marches on. And of course, the big news today, because it's Thursday, is we look at the unemployment numbers, of course. That comes out every Thursday. And the federal government puts out the unemployment numbers. And the way this works is if you are in the unfortunate position of having lost your job last week or prior to this week, you will at some point make a decision to go to the unemployment office in your state and apply for unemployment benefits. Now, this isn't a windfall where you can sit on the couch and make lots of money by doing nothing. These unemployment programs tend to give somebody who qualifies a little bit of money, and the idea is that it'll buy enough food to keep you alive while you can, you know, start your job search and find employment elsewhere. So they're not a windfall, but they are a social safety net program. All the states have them. And of course, when people go to apply for unemployment, you can't have gotten fired from your job for misbehavior or something. This has to be an economic layoff where your job is, you know, terminated because your company went out of business or they're laying people off, and it doesn't even work for strikes. If you're on strike, then usually in most states that doesn't allow you to qualify for unemployment. Maybe some states do, who knows. But at the end of the day, it's the unfortunate person who loses their job. And this is a bad time of the year to lose your job because we are going into the holiday season, a time when people are thankful and then joyful and they want to be happy, and who wants to be filing for unemployment, you know, the first week of November, just before Thanksgiving and the December holidays, Christmas. And so this is an interesting metric that we're looking at. And of course, today's date numbers are a bit disconcerting. Last week, you will remember that it was 218,000, and that number had been adjusted because they always adjust a week later for some reason. But they add up all the 50 state programs. All right, how many people in every state applied for unemployment? It was 218,000 last week. Well, this week it has jumped to 231,000. So we're looking at, you know, it's a significant increase. It's certainly not a doubling or anything, but, you know, it's 218,000 a week before, and now it's 231,000. So it trends up. And that's a little bit disconcerting as we're going into the holiday season, because that's when a lot of places are hiring holiday help or temporary help or seasonal help. And at the end of the day, you would expect to see unemployment claims going down, because there are places that you can get a job through the holidays, you know, the retail, primarily retail, but it keeps you going and gives you something to do and, of course, a way to earn a living. Well, we're sadly seeing this number going up, and, of course, that's always disconcerting because you'd rather see it going down, okay? Although I must say that, you know, 218,000 or 231,000, well, it's a lot of people nationwide. You know, back in the day in the 2008 period, we were looking at 350, 400,000, half a million people a week signing up for unemployment. We're not seeing that. We're seeing an increase in what would be considered something of a relatively, you know, normal. If you think of 330 million Americans and you got 218,000 of them filed for unemployment, that doesn't paint the picture of a crisis. But what's important from the economic perspective is that there's a trend going up from 218 to 231 at a time when it should be going down because of holiday hiring. The other interesting news is that there are two components. Of course, it's who filed last week. That's the new claims. And then there's that continuing unemployment number. Because state unemployment programs have a duration. There's a period of time that you can be on unemployment. And at some point, you run out of weeks and they cut you off because they don't want you figuring out how to be unemployed and surviving on a little bit of money and basically cruising through life on the unemployment checks. So there's a time limit, and some states are more strict than others. Wisconsin's pretty strict. You have to file, you have to apply in two jobs every week, you know, which means you have to show proof that you fill out an application or send a resume. And then there's a period of weeks, and then after that, you're done. And that incentivizes people to go look for a real job and get off the unemployment program. So we look at the continuing number, which is a bigger number. And that number has, again, increased. We talked about that last Thursday, and we're talking about it again today. It's 1.864 million people. So let's say almost 1.9 million or almost 2 million people are on the unemployment system as continuing beneficiaries or benefit receivers. And this is the highest it's been since November of 2021, which was 2 years ago. So we're looking at a continuing unemployment number that is increasing weekly, which means that even though fewer people are coming in, well, now this week it's more people coming in, there's fewer people falling off the back end. So people are riding this to the end, so the continuing claims are higher. And that is what we're seeing. And again, that's not a good sign of a healthy, robust economy. If this were a healthy, robust economy, we'd see fewer people filing for unemployment. And again, the 231,000 is not an earth-shattering number. It's half of what it used to be. But it's this continuing number that we watch, because once you're filing for unemployment, what it's telling us is it's a lot harder to get off and get into the next job. And maybe people are just being selective. They're looking for the job of their dreams. Maybe, you know, think, well, I'll run this out the 2 years or the 16 months or whatever the state provides. But the reality is they're not showing job mobility where you can quit your job, go on unemployment. Well, you can't. You get laid off from your job. You go on unemployment, you take your time, you find the job of your dreams, and then you're off to the next employment gig. This is suggesting that people are stuck in this system longer than they'd prefer. So again, when we look at, you know, the overall health of the economy, and we see the headlines that this is, the economy's booming, it's just fine. That's not what the numbers are showing, at least with respect to the unemployment numbers, and that is a pretty good indication of how people, you know, are working or not working in the country. Now, that's also supported by another headline today. This is earnings season. Basically, the companies report, public companies will report their financials, and then they'll make these very controlled, I don't want to say forward-looking statements, but what they want to do is they want to give you their outlook, but they do it in a way that is full and fair disclosure under the 33 Act and the 34 Act, so it doesn't distort the value of the stock. So when they put out these statements, and the CEO and the CFO of the public companies who are personally liable will make these statements in these conference calls, and they do this for the benefit of stock analysts. Because if you're a publicly traded company and you're the CEO and the CFO, you have salaries, but you have options, and you have options for millions of shares. And if you do this right, you will, of course, retire very wealthy, because the options will be either exercised, bought back, whatever the program is. But you will walk out of there well set for your retirement. If you do it wrong, you very well could expect perhaps a knock on the door from the Securities and Exchange Commission, because you have to tell the truth. This isn't an area where you can go in a public conference call that anybody can dial into if you really wanted to, you know, figure out how to listen to one of these, and you should. It's an interesting experience. But when they're talking, and they're talking about the future of their, you know, here are our sales right now. This is what we're reporting, and our sense is in the next quarter, the next half, for the next year, whatever, that we're kind of anticipating sales will go up, you know. But they hedge that, and they're not going to say, yeah, sales will be up 20%, and then you jump in and buy the stock, and then the sales don't materialize. That's a problem. So when they make these public statements, the accounting department and the chief financial officer, CFO, I mean, the CFO and the CEO are on the hook personally for these statements. There's personal liability involved. So you better believe when these big shots at these very big public companies speak, that their accounting firm, their audit firm, and of course their law firm, the securities, you know, compliance firm, have looked at these statements, and they have filtered these statements so that they are communicating truthfully and accurately when they speak. And, you know, there's always this speculative nature, you know, sales will go up next year until, you know, but at the end of the day, you can rest assured that the people making these statements are telling as close to the truth as can humanly be divined when you're trying to predict the future. So when we read like the Walmart is you know, stating consumer caution in their projections, and of course that's the biggest retailer in America. They know what they're doing. They move a lot of stuff in, and they sell a lot of stuff, and you know, they have stores and warehouses and trucks, and I mean, it's a big operation, as we all know. Walmart's the big deal, and they have to figure out, well, how much stuff do we put in a warehouse? How much stuff should we stock in the stores? I mean, it's not random. There's a lot of thought and analytics that go into keeping a Walmart, your local Walmart, stocked properly. So when people go in there, there's stuff to buy, and they buy at a good price, and you know, it all works. There's a lot of moving parts to that. The whole supply chain. I mean, how do you figure out what you're gonna sell next summer? And you gotta order it, and it comes from China on a boat, and you know, through California on trains and trucks and distribute. So when they're looking at their supply chain, they're figuring out, okay, how much inventory should we put in our stores? They're sensing that the American consumer is slowing down. The discretionary purchases of discretionary items is softening. And of course, they don't want to go out and buy like there's no tomorrow, because they're going to have all this massive inventory in their warehouses that's not moving, and it's going to be sitting in their stores and getting shop worn, you know, and stuff is sitting there. That's not how you run an efficient company. And trust me, nobody controls inventory better than Walmart. Those guys are, you know, they got this down pat. So when they look at their system, you know, their system, and they say, you know, our sales could be a little softer because the consumer is, they're tightening up. They're not spending as much. And the reason they do that is that they want to make these statements so that Wall Street isn't blindsided, where, you know, all of a sudden you do your quarterly reports and, hey, sales are way off. We didn't, well, they knew and they didn't tell us. Well, what they're doing is saying that our analysts are seeing a decline in aggregate demand for our products, and therefore we might be looking at perhaps, you know, our revenues might be a little softer. So we're going to have to adjust our costs. Well, you know, I'm not speaking for Walmart now, but you know, if you're thinking about a big company, you know, let's use XYZ company, because let's just use XYZ company, okay? If XYZ company knows that its sales might be softening because of the underlying strength of the consumer, they're gonna dial back on their purchases, which means less stuff from China, less stuff gonna be shipped, less stuff unloaded at the ports, less stuff's gonna be loaded on a train, trucks, less stuff in the warehouse, less stuff in the stores, and we're probably going to have to trim our sales with respect to our employee base, because those are instant savings by laying people off, which of course will show up in the unemployment numbers I just talked about. So that's what's going on. So when these big companies speak about, you know, a sense of softening, then the smart analysts on Wall Street, they already know what that means. Oh boy, well, you know, their sales are going to be slower. Well, then, you know, and that affects their stock price, of course. So the incentive, of course, for any big company management is to, you know, you don't want to, you know, the sky is falling, because then your stock crashes, and of course your options are worth a lot less, and perhaps the board will fire you. So there's always this way to communicate in a very objective and factual-driven way. So that's why when you see these big companies that are reporting softening in demand, that's a thing. That's something that's another indicator that, you know, notwithstanding the political press and the media saying that the economy is robust, well, maybe not. Maybe not as, quite as robust as you'd like to think. And we also saw that industrial production is down in October. That's another report, the PPI. The industrial production is down, and of course, a lot of that might have to do with the automobile strikes, because as the workers went out on strike, the auto plants stopped producing, and of course, units produced, well, that slowed down. But also, when you think about the supply chain again, if you're making fewer cars, you're not ordering as much steel and plastic and whatever else they make cars out of these days. And it affects those suppliers. And we talked about that there was substantial unemployment. I think it was 75,000 jobs were lost in automotive suppliers. And these tend to be smaller companies, primarily family-owned businesses, where they make the pieces and the parts and the widgets and the gizmos that go into cars. And because of the strike, the big companies stopped ordering parts, supplies. What do you need parts for? They're not making cars. And of course, that has an immediate ripple effect on the revenues of these suppliers. And the suppliers, the first thing they do is you got to lay your people off because you know that you have to trim your costs very quickly or you're going to go under and you're going to be running at a loss. Why should I be running at a loss? Because General Motors is on strike. Well, that's kind of the pressure that the UAW has. It's not just pressure on the big three who've got a lot of money and they can sit and, you know, ride things out. Instead, if you can start to bankrupt big three suppliers, that's a problem because that affects the supply chain. If a supplier goes out of business, you got to find a new supplier. So how do you do that? You know, it takes a while for somebody to emerge. And of course, you'd rather be having U.S. component suppliers than, you know, shipping it offshore somewhere. So there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to this idea of analyzing the economy as to where we're going. We do know that travel is projected to be high this next coming week, and I guess that probably starts tomorrow as we prepare for the Thanksgiving week. And the question is, you know, people, will they be flying by airplane? Will it be the usual chaos at airports over the holiday? How many more people will be driving? Well, gasoline prices have been softening for a number of reasons. You'd expect with the war in the Middle East and the Russians and the Iranians involved that, you know, gas prices would be soaring. But we do have the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and we do have domestic production. And at the end of the day, when you think about how oil is fractionalized into components, there's gasoline, there's diesel fuel for trucks and trains and airplanes, and then, well, actually with jet fuel and other categories. So if the industrial demand for fuel is down, because we know that trucking companies aren't shipping anywhere near as much as they used to, that means there's more oil left to be refined for gasoline. So the demand for gasoline can stay consistent and ceteris paribus, the supply can increase because there's more raw materials available. So the price goes down. So we're seeing that rippling through the economy. And I guess that will help travel. But as we know, Thanksgiving is probably the worst time of the year to travel because it gets pretty busy out there. But it also shows that people are coming out and they're actually going places. So if you're going to plan a trip somewhere in Thanksgiving and you're a bit mindful of your personal budget, then perhaps you're cutting back on the discretionary spending at home to save up money to take your trip. And it's all interrelated. And that's why when you look at these metrics that come out every day, there's numbers, you really want to be trying to paint the broadest macro picture you can to get a sense of where things are going. And of course, it's great that people are traveling, but travel is one aspect. And the question is, when they get to their destination, do they go out to restaurants to stay in hotels or rent cars? Or are they staying with a friend in the, you know, in the extra bedroom and, you know, grilling hamburgers for Thanksgiving? We'll find out. Okay, I also wanted to talk about another interesting phenomenon. I'd like to pick a few things that are going up. But there's a story about the demand for cold storage has been increasing. And that's a good thing. Well, let's talk briefly what cold storage is all about. It's a thing, and when you have perishable goods and primarily foodstuffs, as these are grown around the world and shipped to various markets in the United States, you have to keep the stuff cold. Like meat coming from the producers to warehouses and then grocery stores. You know, you go to your grocery store and there's a, you know, $80 package of steaks, and wow. But the point is that the meat has to stay cold all the way from the beginning to the end, and cold storage is becoming a big thing. And of course, the story was talking about because people are ordering more food online and they're grocery shopping more than going to restaurants, that the demand for cold storage is increasing. And of course, now if you're a commercial a real estate developer and you're in an office building that's, you know, empty and your apartments aren't renting and you think, gee, I really would like to stay in business as a commercial developer of real estate, what you're seeing is that they are migrating toward cold storage, which is four walls, a roof, and an air conditioning system that keeps the temperature cool enough so that you can bring food from the suppliers into the warehouse, and that's the cold storage part. And from the warehouse, it's distributed to the grocery stores, which, of course, that's the immediate consumption, you know, keep things in the grocery store very long. So the cold storage is that intermediary. And the fact that that's increasing markedly across the United States suggests, again, that we're seeing this fundamental shift in how people are living and reacting. And what it's telling you is that people are much happier to be local than they were concentrated into big cities. And I think that's a real telling tale. So I guess if you're looking for a, you know, an industry to watch that may have a future, cold storage may be the ticket for you. Now, keep in mind that cold storage is absolutely 100% dependent upon grid quality electric power. You must have enough electrons to run the refrigeration equipment to keep the building cold, because if the power goes out and they don't have backup, you can destroy a lot of food because it became too warm. There are health department rules about how cold is supposed to be, and you don't want to be in a position where the power goes out. So as I've been talking about this week, quality of grid power is very, very important. So as we see ourselves migrating to the digital world, we are also looking at cold storage as becoming a very important component, because you can go for a while without heat. You can stand in front of the trash barrel, you know, with you warming your hands. But when the cold storage goes out, then all of a sudden the supply chain of food becomes very, very challenged in our highly modernized food distribution system. Of course, the people who prepare and store their own food probably don't worry about it, but if power goes out in your house, your freezer goes out, you know what I'm talking about. So we'll keep an eye on that. That's a silver lining again in industrial development. I did notice that California, you know, always a leader, always a thought leader in economic disaster. They passed a bill in California about the minimum wage for hospital workers is now $25 per hour. And I'm not belittling or besmirching hospital workers. Obviously, those are very important people. They do a very important service. If you're laying on your back staring at the ceiling in a hospital room, you're very thankful that there are hospital workers there. But what it tells you is that across the board, $25 per hour to work in a hospital. And that's minimum wage. I mean, obviously, if you're a doctor, hopefully you're making, you know, 26, 27, you're really cleaning out. But the point is, that sets a metric for the United States, because California has always been a regulatory leader. And when other states, and especially unions, and now the United Auto Workers Union, you know, they had come to a tentative agreement with the big three auto companies to with respect to their labor agreement. And it was like $38 an hour or something, plus, you know, adjustments in benefits. And lo and behold, California, they've got $25 an hour to work in a hospital. So the guy, you know, the person who's working on the, you know, production line at the car factory is thinking, well, boy, it's not that big a spread between, you know, somebody who's working in a hospital and somebody who's building a car. I should get more money. And you wonder if that isn't why that group, which plant it was, where the members, the union members, actually voted down the agreement, which requires the UAW to go back to the negotiating table. And it's price signals like that. And all of that is creating that cost push inflation within the economy, because there's always lags in an economic model. And as people are perceiving 9% inflation last year, you know, here's a year later, a little over a year later, and we're still seeing, you know, 3.2, 3 point whatever, you know, the inflation number came down last week to 3.2 from 3.7. But the core is like 4.1, down from 4.2. People see that. If you remember the University of Michigan study that I talked about, their survey is people's perception of inflation is still pretty high. Well, that's the cost push. So when you see these wage signals, you know, if you're working in a hospital in Wisconsin, you know, boy, California, they're getting $25 an hour. That's a push. And, you know, hey, we want that too, because, you know, why shouldn't we? They get it out there. We want it the same year. And that really continues to drive the you know, this inflationary situation that we keep talking about. And that's why it's very hard to unwind inflation. Well, anyway, that's all I have for today. Happy to be able to share my thoughts with you. Thank you so much for listening to WVW-TV and Eastman Financial Report. Talk to you tomorrow. Have a good day. Bye.